gets, well, perfect timing, perfect timing. Believe it or not, we are already on lesson number 9, chapter 11. And I think we'll be able to get through chapter 11 tonight. Tonight we're going to talk about some issues, again, that Paul's addressing, some issues related to the behavior of men and women, and some issues related to how the church in Corinth is gathering around the Lord's table. So our approach for the class tonight, I would like to go back. I said to do a quick review of chapter 10. I really don't want it to be too quick because I really enjoyed our study on Sunday, and I'm going to pull out some of the key themes that we talked about. We'll go through that. And as we go through it, I'd ask for comments or whatever you have, other things you've been thinking about. We can take the time to do that. We'll go into chapter 11. We'll address this first issue around men and women, talk about the Lord's Supper, and I'm going to try a group activity tonight. We haven't done one in here this segment. Unfortunately, this is really the only place that it fit in the class. It's towards the end. So please continue to talk throughout the class, but by the end, you will have an official time to get together with a person sitting next to you, and I'm going to pose a question, and you guys will, and it's probably not a very easy question, I don't think, so you guys will have a partner to help you with the question. Okay, not a lot of people here tonight. If you're visiting and I'm overlooking you, welcome, glad you're here. So we'll go ahead and get started with our review. And kind of the way I started the class on Sunday was I went back all the way back to chapter 9 and pointed out what Paul said. You know, everybody's running the race here, but you need to run in a manner that you're going to win, because in this particular example that he uses here, there's only one winner. So certainly sitting on the sidelines or complacency is not going to result in your winning. There's actual things that you need to do to run in this race. Then he goes back and he uses the children of Israel as an example and says, hey, they were all led out of Egypt. They were all under the care of God. But at the end of the day, what happened? Well, most of them, their bodies were left scattered in the wilderness. So not a very encouraging idea, but he's certainly not trying to depress us. He's trying to tell us that just because you're in the building, in the pew, in the church, in the family, don't just assume that everything is all right. There's more involved in serving God than being under some sort of umbrella or a cloud or whatever. You need to be working to show yourself approved to God. So that's a pretty powerful theme for them and a powerful theme for us as well. And then the other one that we covered on Sunday was, so it told us how important it was to get ready for the race, to run in the race, to avoid complacency. Then he gave us an example, flashback to kind of the game tapes of what had happened to the children of Israel in this condition. So what were some of the things that resulted in their bodies being scattered in the wilderness? And he gave us four different quick things there. So the principle and idea that we are hopefully took away from that is the fact that we should be mindful of the things that Paul shared with the church in Corinth. We should be applying those things to our own life so we don't fall into the same pitfalls, right? And then the next major thing that we covered was this idea that we really do, not only do we have the game tapes, we've been able to see what's happened before in history, and Paul was using that, and we should use that. We really got this verse in 13 that Satan really has a pretty limited playbook, and everyone that's been led away by temptation before, he's used these plays on, or these techniques on before. So there's nothing that's not common to men. So you should know what's coming. Then I listed some of the reasons why this is easier said than done. He uses some of these things. He uses our own desires to blur things that are really common, that really haven't changed through time, that man continues to fall into trouble with. And maybe you thought about this list this week. I thought about it a little bit, and one that I probably should have added was on the bottom here, this idea around complacency. I'm convinced that akin to complacency or before complacency also often comes comfort. So if things are well or perceived to be well, that's another thing that Satan can use to lure us into this state of being complacent and happy and feeling like we're okay when we're really not. And that, again, that was the problem in the church in Corinth. They felt like they were fine and they weren't. You want to have any other thoughts or reflections on this so far? Okay. Good, you guys were paying attention on Sunday. Then the last point, second to last point was, we know God's playbook. And God's playbook involves really two major things. One, us loving God and following Him and striving to please Him with every ounce of our being. But we also see here in chapter 10 this idea that we also have a responsibility and an obligation to those that are around us. So our desire, just like God's desire, is that all will be saved. And that is the most sincere form of love that we can show our fellow man, is that we're concerned not only about our own salvation, but we're concerned about the others that are in the race with us as well. So Paul's really challenged them. You can't be complacent. You've got to get involved with your own salvation. You have to guard yourself against temptation. And then ultimately here, you're trying to be a good influence and example, edifying those that are around you. The last idea that we didn't really get to is summed up here in the last part of chapter 10. This can be hard. This is difficult, especially when you think about it in the context of beyond being responsible for yourself, understanding the influence that you have on others around you. And in this instance, it was the eating of meat. And you can see there in verse 29, "For why is my liberty judged by another man's conscience? If I partake with thanks, why am I evil spoken of for the food over which I give thanks?" So it is difficult sometimes when we're doing something that in and of itself, I love that phrase, I think Marty came up with that, something that in and of itself is not wrong, and sometimes you want to just say, well, you know, give me a break. Shouldn't I be allowed to do this? But look at the end of the verse there, at the end of the chapter. The stakes are high here. So the ultimate goal is that you're saved, but that others will be saved as well. So that's the reason why it's important and sometimes very necessary to restrict yourself in doing something that you don't really have a problem with, or you might feel like it's an okay thing to do. You have to understand that there's circumstances where you can actually help others in a very meaningful way by restricting your own liberties. There's a lot of content in chapter 10, and that will set us up pretty nicely, I think, for chapter 11. Other reflections or thoughts that people had through the week or tonight? Okay, fair enough. So I have asked Chester to lead our minds in prayer before we get into chapter 11. All right. So I've asked Clay to read the first part of chapter 11. Before we do that, I'm going to try and set this up a little bit. So I'll refresh your memory back to chapter 7. Remember at the beginning of chapter 7, and I believe he also says this at the beginning of chapter 8 as well. He says, "Now concerning the things which you wrote to me." So there was questions that they wrote to him about. What was the issue in chapter 7 that he was answering questions on and clarifying on? Marriage. Yeah, marriage. And then he continues in chapter 8 with questions around knowledge. And I really believe tonight, if we think about chapter 11, that he's really continuing to respond to their concerns, remind them of things that he has taught them before. So he's installed some traditions, some practices with them. And this, again, is another reminder. Maybe this was part of the letter that they wrote to him. They had questions. And they had questions specific to public worship. Ordinances, customs within public worship, and then also issues, questions around the Lord's Supper. Or at least around the Lord's Supper from what he had heard. He recognized that there was issues there. So as we go through chapter 11 tonight, think of chapter 11 is another set of answers to a different set of questions as Paul's trying to guide people back and direct them to what he had told them originally. All right, so Clay's going to read for us now.
Imitate me just as I also imitate Christ. Now I praise you, brethren, that you remember me in all things and keep the traditions just as I deliver them to you. But I want you to know that the head of every man is Christ, the head of woman is man, and the head of Christ is God. Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonors his head. But every woman who prays or prophesies with her head uncovered dishonors her head, for that is one and the same. And if her head were shaved, for if a woman is not covered, let her also be shorn. But it is shameful for a woman to be shorn or shaved, let her be covered. For a man indeed ought not to cover his head, since he is the image and glory of God. But woman is the glory of man. For man is not from woman, but woman from man. Nor was man created for the woman, but woman for the man. For this reason, the woman ought to have a symbol of authority on her head, because of the angels. Nevertheless, neither is man independent of woman, nor woman independent of man in the Lord. For as woman came from man, even so man also comes through woman. But all things are from God. Judge among yourselves, is it proper for a woman to pray to God with her head uncovered? Does not even nature itself teach you that if a man has long hair, it is a dishonor to him? But if a woman has long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given to her for a covering. But if anyone seems to be contentious, we have no such custom, nor do the churches of God.
Okay. So what do you think about when you see these passages? What's the key issue, the key topic that's usually discussed? The covering. Yes, thank you. So we'll get to that tonight, but I would suggest to you that there's some other principles implied in these verses, or taught in these verses, that can apply to a lot of different circumstances. So I've got about 7 different things that I've pulled out from these verses that I think, regardless of the head covering topic, there's some really powerful stuff in there. And often what we get to these verses, and I did it the first time I went through, is, you know, how am I going to address the head covering issue or whatever? And then I kind of looked at it and like, there's a whole lot of really great stuff for us in these verses, even beyond that discussion. Again, the context is Paul's writing them to remind them of the traditions and the way they are to act based on what he told them before. So I've got 7, and I'd ask for your help as we go through these. So kind of, you know, beyond that issue, are there other principles? What is the principle that he introduces in verse 2 before he even starts the other discussion? Yes, ma'am. Yeah, and how were they to keep them? Yes, just as he had delivered them. So what is our application for this? This says a lot in one verse. What does this mean? Okay. Good. So he is speaking for Christ. So there's, you know, folks that sometimes have problems with a lot of the things that Paul says in 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians, right? That's Paul's opinion. Usually the message of the gospel is not disputed, but from this verse that we see, Paul is saying there were also things that he told them about the way they are to conduct themselves, and they went away from that, and now he's guiding them back to that. So the only conclusion that I can reach from that is that the traditions that he'd shared with them, the things that he is going to remind them of in the next few verses, are applicable to us as well, and that we should be following them. Does that make sense to folks? Yes. Yeah, so he's imitating Christ, and yeah, so sometimes there's a tendency to take, you know, just the message of the gospel, but he is declaring by his authority as an apostle that the things that he set in motion with that church were to continue, and that is his desire here by writing back to them. So that one verse, I think if we stop right there, is a huge principle for us. Yes, sir. Very good. Thank you. Perfect. So Christ is our perfect example of selflessness. And Paul is trying to imitate Christ just as we should as well. And we already know that there was a problem in the church of Corinth around divisions, around factions. So they were not a group that was united. They were a group that was divided and caring and loving less for each other than they should. So, excellent point. Thank you for bringing that up. Okay, so I'm going to keep going. I said I have seven. I gave you the next one. I wasn't supposed to do that, but I'll give it to you anyway. So the one here in verse 3, again, a lot in one verse, but I want you to know the head of every man is Christ, and the head of woman is man, and the head of Christ is God. So this states very clearly that there is an order and a partnership in the universe, in God's creation. Is this a popular idea today? Why is it not popular? How does it manifest itself? What are people striving for? Striving for their own well-being, yes. Equality. Or equivalency. So there is no difference at all, right? So we blur everything together. It's very politically incorrect to make distinctions, especially distinctions like this. But it was interesting, just last week, one of our kids came home and told us what she'd heard in biology class, and the teacher was saying, or it was actually in the textbook now, that gender is no longer defined by biological sex, that is not something that you can say. So I use that as an example just to say that this idea that anything would be different or that there would be an order about anything, people want to get rid of that idea, even down to gender, and blur and say there are absolutely no differences and everything is exactly the same. And we can see here that there is an order and there are differences. Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Good point. Not at all. Thank you. Yeah, I was trying to fast forward to the modern application, but you're absolutely right. So it wasn't an issue or a problem there, and it's the reason why I addressed it. Other comments or ideas on this one? So again, yes, sir, John. Yes. Good. So he's directing them back to the very beginning here and the fundamental principles here of how order is established. Okay, good. Next one I have, and I'll just keep going through these. And these are the verses particular here that we'll come back to in a minute, talking about the head covering. But just a general principle here that you should not dishonor yourself, or it's not good to dishonor yourself in front of others. And beyond this question around the covering here, I think you could extend this principle to the way we dress. If we are dressed immodestly, there's certainly an opportunity for us to dishonor ourselves, dishonor others that are around us. There are probably other things there as well, but these folks, when they're coming together, certainly should be in a condition of honor for their own sake, but also how they're viewed by others. We'll keep going. 4, there is order in creation. Don't violate it. This is another one today that tends to be more and more, less and less popular. But once again, to Clayton's point, it was a problem back then as well. There are differences between men and women. That doesn't mean there's an inferiority at all, but Paul is basically giving them a history lesson all the way back to Genesis, talking about how we came about and how we are. So again, I think this is a good principle for us as we're thinking about other things as well. I didn't really have a lot of other thoughts on that one. Any other comments on this one? Good. You guys must be wanting to get to the group project. 5, that this relationship between man and woman and man and God is a very important relationship. And there's specifically in between man and women, there's an interdependency. So not only is there not a superiority or inferiority, the two need each other. That's a very powerful principle here for us to think about. That part of God's creation, part of his plan, he knew that need, and he knew there was a need for the partnership, and that is essential. So again, this is not an idea that's really talked about that much. It's usually viewed as offensive, but it's really a reality that we need this. Comments, questions? Yes, absolutely. Okay. 13 through 15, use common sense. So he talks about hair in these verses. And if you read verse 14 in particular there, he seems to be pointing out some things that should be obvious to them based on things that are around them, but they're not getting it. And he points them to that. The last one that I had here is a really important one in verse 16. But if anyone seems to be contentious, we have no such custom, nor do the churches of God. So he was reminding them of customs and the way they should act, but then he tells them, hey, you guys have added a custom which was never part of the plan, and that is this idea of being contentious. What does it mean to be contentious? Yes, ma'am? Argumentative, good. Full of strife. Disagreement, full of disagreement. Divisive. Looking for problems, right? Looking for disagreements. And this one can manifest itself in the way we even communicate with each other. Like, Joel, I completely disagree with everything you said. That's probably never true that I completely disagree with everything you said, but that is just a level of me looking for the absolute worst outcome in that situation. So there were contentions. We certainly know there were divisions, and it's logical to think that the divisions had foundation in this lack of love and contention with each other. So this is not part of what we should be doing as a Christian family together. Cut it out. Okay. Other comments, questions, thoughts? This is a big one. Again, so I hope I made the point that there's a lot of really, really powerful stuff in here in these verses that sometimes we can just glance over and not apply or not think about. All right, so go on. And this is basically from your lesson sheet. Four different views of what this is talking about relating to the head covering. It's interesting, the high school class is studying this chapter tonight as well, and I asked my daughter, I said, do you know about the four different views? And she said, Dad, there's more than that. So maybe they're smarter than us. I don't know. They're studying more than four possible interpretations of what this is. I will tell you very candidly, this is not something that I've studied extensively. I would offer those to you as something that you can consider and think. I read all the verses associated with each one of these. I would certainly, what I took out of this was kind of the last verse is trying not to be contentious about this in particular, and certainly not trying to judge or put down someone that may hold any of those different views. Anyone have any thoughts or comments beyond that? What are the other five or six at the high school classes smarter than us that are studying? I think these are the basic ones. And if you look back through the verses, you can see in particular there the view that this is the woman's hair is called out. I had that written down here in one of the verses. But you can find it. 15. Called out in verse 15. And then, I lost my page. Also, the idea that this is just specifically during the exercise of spiritual gifts, that's kind of where this section starts, talking about prophecy. So I would encourage you to do your own study on this, but when you read these verses, don't just focus myopically on that section. Try and think about the other things and the other principles that we can call out of it. So we are doing great. We are going to get to our group work. But before that, Clay is going to read for us again. We're going to read down through verse 17 through 26, getting into the issue that they were experiencing related to the Lord's Supper. So let's go ahead and read.
Now in giving these instructions, I do not praise you, since you come together not for the better, but for the worse. For first of all, when you come together as a church, I hear that there is divisions among you. And in part, I believe it. For there must also be factions among you, that those who are approved may be recognized among you. Therefore, when you come together in one place, it is not to eat the Lord's Supper. For in eating, each one takes his own supper ahead of the others. And one is hungry, and another is drunk. What? Do you not have houses to eat and drink in? Or do you despise the church of God and shame those who have nothing? What shall I say to you? Shall I praise you in this? I do not praise you. For I received from the Lord that which I also delivered to you, that the Lord Jesus, on the same night in which he was betrayed, took bread. And when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, Take, eat, this is my body which is broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me. In the same manner, he also took the cup after supper, saying, This cup is the new covenant in my blood. This do as often as you drink it, in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death till he comes.
Very good, thank you. So I have studied this passage like you have, I think, for years and years and years, and had a pretty good understanding of it, I thought. And a few years ago, I was studying with actually a family member that approached me with a different point of view. And that's really kind of the basis for the group work. And before I read the question, I will tell you, I think it's a very relevant issue. I know it was a few years ago. It may be a little bit difficult, but I think it's okay in a class like this for us to go a little bit deeper and ask questions or answer questions using the text and the passage. And part of the reason why I'm asking you to work on this is I really want to hear what you say, have to say an answer to this particular question, and you'll benefit me, and I may be able to benefit some other people from your good thoughts. All right, so here's basically the question. You have a friend, I told you already, with someone in my family, that you know is basically replace the Lord's Supper with like a potluck. So you bring your own dish, whatever. Maybe we get a larger table up here, and we're eating together, and we're just having a potluck. And you share this passage thinking, hey, you know, I can't wait to share this with you. This is going to answer all of your questions about what you're doing. And they respond to you and say that the passage is not really a condemnation or a prohibition around having a potluck up here on Sunday, that it's just actually instructions on how to go about it. So no pushing and shoving. Don't eat so much that you go home with a full belly. Wait on each other before you start the buffet line. I'm being a little bit funny, but those were the kind of the tactical execution versus a prohibition or, hey, you need to be going about this in a different way. So how do you respond after that question? So you're going to get next to a couple smart people sitting next to you. If you think you have the answers, you can come up with the answers on your own. And we're going to get back together in like 5 minutes and edify each other with great wisdom. Appoint a spokesperson or spokespersons. Good conversation. I've got my pen ready. I'm going to write everything down. This is good stuff. All right, who wants to go first? What are you going to say to your friend? You thought you had it. You laid out the verse and bam, you kind of got surprised. Come on. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, 34 as well. So two times in 34, if you're hungry, go eat at home. So the connotation I get there is that this is not the fulfilling of your belly and fulfilling your hunger is not the primary purpose. Take care of that at home. That was your partner's thought. Thank you for giving him the credit. Other ideas or thoughts? Yes, sir. Okay. Well, that's basically what happened to me, but. Yeah. Okay, good. Yes. Okay, good. So you kind of cut to the chase and Paul had told them or said, hey, I've been told by the Lord, this is what happened, this is how you're supposed to do it. And didn't have any mention of anything else in there. Doug. Okay, so wrong motivation in coming together, and then also what you said there, I think you said controversy or conflict. If you look at verse 18 and 19, that was really kind of the root of this thing, right? There was a division, a heresy. So this practice that had started since he left, the foundation of it was some sort of disagreement or division among them. So they didn't come to this in a unanimous way. That's a bad thing to start with. Other thoughts or ideas? Yeah. Yeah, so you go to Luke 22 and you hear about what? You hear about the bread and the cup. So additions to that would be additions to what Luke said, in addition to what Paul repeated here. Yes. Yes. Yes, they were reclining at the table. That's good. Yes. Yes. Good. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, good. So there's an element of selfishness and making others feel bad here, right? So people that have more bring in, I don't know, the honey baked ham or whatever. No offense to certain people. And other people that don't have honey baked ham kind of money are feeling bad, right? I mean, it's like kind of discouraging them. Certainly not the intention of the Lord's Supper to make people that don't have a lot feel bad about it. Yes, ma'am. Yes. Yeah. Very good. Yeah, there's definitely. Yes. Examining yourself. Thank you for that. There definitely is a tactical element of it, and the person I was studying with, I never really got to the details of how do you do it. Is there a point where you pray it first, and then or do you pause during the middle of it? How do you do that and keep the focus on what you're supposed to be focusing on? The other thing I call your attention is in verse 20, as kind of a proof text as well. They convinced themselves, they were deceived that what they were doing was correct, when it really wasn't doing it correctly the way that they should have been. And then the other one that I've just thought about and I've used as well is that, as far as I know, this is the only mention of this kind of potluck style thing happening, and it's mentioned in a very negative context with a rebuke and a correction. So the one time that we have twice, if you're hungry, eat at home, eat your meals at home. It came out of divisions. It was done thinking they were doing the right thing, but they were really deceiving themselves. There was others that were in the group that were actually offended by the Lord's Supper, which was certainly not Christ's intention at all. Ronnie? Yeah. Yeah. They're not ready, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the intentions were confused why they were there. They didn't have food. Exactly. Very good. So Paul says at the end there, he says, you're hungry, eat at home, and I'll straighten the rest out when I come. There were more issues that he was concerned about. Thank you for stretching your brains with me tonight. An important question. A lot of people are affected by this, and hopefully you gain something from it, and the study. So we'll continue on Sunday morning with lesson 10, which is in the back.